This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Bill Cobbs is one of the four Democrats running for his party's nomination for governor. He has not held political office before. He is a former executive for Xerox. Bill Cobbs, thank you very much for being here.
Gordon, thank you for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit more about yourself beyond your experience with Xerox and why it is you're running for governor.
So I was born and raised in Detroit. Lived on a street called Lawrence between 12th and 14th. As a young kid, I got to actually see the tanks rolling down 12th Street during the 67 riot. When I graduated from high school in 1970, I went to the University of Michigan for a year. After that, my folks and I ran out of money, so I enlisted in the United States Navy. While I was in the Navy, I was fortunate enough to be selected for the Navy Boost Program, stands for Broadened Opportunities for Officer Selection and Training. That program allowed me to return to the University of Michigan and complete my undergraduate education. I then completed my naval service. When I had done that, I had gotten admitted to Wayne State University Law School. While I was going to law school, I was a Detroit cop and did that for 4 years, all while I was in law school. When I finished, I took an entry-level job at Xerox. And over the course of my Xerox career, I eventually became the Global Vice President for Public Sector. I started that division in 1994 with eight people. And over an eight-year period, we built it into a billion-dollar division, employing over 2,500 people around the world. I met my wife, Lisa, at the University of Michigan, and we've been a team for the last 38 years. I've got two adult children, Will and Brooke, and I've got a very precocious four-year-old granddaughter, Kennedy. And I'm running for governor because I think most people who are probably listening to this program know that we can be doing better here. And it's fundamentally time to get Michigan back on track.
Okay. How do we get back on track? For instance, let's start with education.
Education is absolutely key. You know, we've had public education in Michigan under attack for the last few decades. And we've seen our educational standing decrease every single year. And here's the thing that I don't think that we get, that we truly understand. In America, education is the primary gateway to any kind of social mobility. If we don't provide our children with the right kind of education, their ability to move in both the economic and social world is diminished. It almost, in fact, doesn't exist. We also have to recognize that it is the government's responsibility to provide education for our children. And we've moved to this perspective that privatization of education is a good way to go. And, you know, even though we've had charter schools in Michigan for well over two decades, we don't have any empirical data to support the notion that they're delivering a better education to our children. So we got to get refocused. You know, I've said as an ex-governor of the state, one of the things I want to do regarding education is to return vocational training to every single high school. Every child doesn't want to go to or can't go to college. And we've got to be providing them with a pathway to a good life. If we return vocational training to every single high school, we can almost guarantee that when we graduate a child, they've got the skills they need to go out and make a decent living.
Does Governor Snyder then have something of the right idea with his proposal to boost skilled trades in Michigan?
I think it's a good idea, but I think we've got to really get that program rolling in our high schools, because if we focus primarily on the unions and junior colleges providing that training, we're leaving it to chance. Because, you know, one of the challenges that young folks have in terms of junior college is how are they going to pay for it? You know, we've seen the cost of education rise astronomically in this state. And, you know, I believe that we can start that process in the high school level and help them to avoid some of those cost issues. The unions are only going to train so many people, so we can't use that as a fundamental delivery mechanism for that kind of training.
You think someone can come out of high school at the age of 18 with the skills necessary to, for instance, construct wind turbines? That's something they do at Kalamazoo Valley Community College.
I think so. I think we can be delivering folks with electrical training, and we can be delivering roofers. We can be delivering folks who have started basic plumbing training. You know, it's funny. I had a plumber at my house 2 weeks ago, and he spent 2 hours there, and I got a bill for $500. Very honorable profession, and, you know, one that allows the people that do it to lead a very decent life.
You think there are some things that require a little more skill that the community colleges still have to have a role in?
Clearly. You know, we can't get it all done in high school, but we can get a good head start on it.
You say that you want a pretty ambitious infrastructure plan for the state. Where would you get the money for that?
Well, I've said I want to launch a $60 billion infrastructure plan that will run for the next 25, 30 years. Now, clearly, that's aggressive, and I'm probably the only first person talking about this. But here's the reality. If we don't do it, the price is only going to go up. And we know that we're living in a state where our roads are horrible. I always tell people that Flint is really a canary in the coal mine, because what happened in the city of Flint was primarily a result of infrastructure that had not been addressed for decades. And it's an indicator of what can happen in any city in our state. So how do we get there? I want to float a 30-year municipal bond. I want to do something else unusual to service that bond. I think it's time that Michigan really deploy a 21st century tax policy. You know, it doesn't make sense that in our state, it doesn't matter whether you make $20,000 a year or $1 million, we all pay the same 4.25% tax rate. I want to move to a graduated tax so that your tax is really based on income. Now, that would not impact a family that had a household income less than $200,000. They'd stay at 4.25%. Any household with an income greater than that would be impacted by the new tax structure. That tax structure would have a top rate on it of 10%. For someone or a family to be paying 10%, they'd have to have a household income greater than $600,000. I don't think it's a burden if you're making $600,000 that you pay a higher tax rate and you really pay your fair share of maintaining this infrastructure model that we need to lead decent lives in this state.
Would it be a marginal tax rate? In other words, like your first $25,000?
Yeah, exactly.
How ambitious is that? I mean, I can imagine that's going to require a constitutional amendment.
It's going to require a constitutional amendment. But here's the thing that we all need to recognize. We're going to have to do something regarding our tax structure, because next year, when we go into 2019, if we haven't fundamentally addressed some of the things that we're doing fiscally in this state, by the time we hit the fourth quarter, our general fund will be empty. And nobody wants to get caught with that surprise, because, you know, what will happen if we aren't prepared, if we aren't making the right kind of moves, is that we will go to citizens and say, we're going to cut essential services. And when you, you know, when you start talking about doing less in terms of snow removal, doing less in terms of managing waste, people sit up and pay attention.
You brought up Flint. If you were the governor right now, would citizens in Flint have to worry about getting free bottled water?
Not at all. In fact, I've said that, you know, I'm really disturbed that the governor consistently talks about Michigan's rainy day fund and the fact that it has almost $1 billion in it. But the most significant crisis that we've had in this state, Flint, has not been addressed with that rainy day fund. If Flint isn't a rainy day, whatever will be in this state? So, you know, I think that the governor should be spending that money to remediate the problems in Flint and getting those people back to a normal life. We're almost 4 years into this, and there's no sign that it's going to end anytime soon.
What is the point at which you think it is reasonable for the state to say, we put free bottled water out there, but conditions are back to normal, and we are going to cease doing that?
Well, see, that's a tough issue, Gordon, because, you know, if any of us were living in a city where through malfeasance the government had actually poisoned our citizens, we would be very reluctant to believe them when they said, it's all over, there's no problem now, everything's back to normal. I think that we have got to earn the trust of the folks in Flint once again because we betrayed them, and we got to fix it.
You say that organized labor is an important part of Michigan's economy. Why is that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I know has one of the few candidates in this race who's ever belonged to a labor union is that organized labor has always been the engine that drove Michigan's economy. You know, now we're seeing, because of right to work, a situation where employment is at an all-time high, but the wages of families has gone down significantly. And the underlying thing that the next governor of the state has got to be prepared to attack is the ever-increasing poverty levels of our citizens in this state. We have well over, and this is going to come as a shock to folks listening to this, but we have almost 40% of the people in this state living at or below the poverty level. That doesn't make sense.
You were a member of a union as a police officer?
As a police officer. And when I graduated from high school, my dad wanted me to know what real work was. So that summer, I worked at a Ford plant and was a member of the UAW.
Do you see other things that the state needs to do to address stagnant wages or address income inequality? I mean, beyond, you know, allowing people to form unions, are there other things or join unions? Do you see other things that the state should be doing?
Well, you know, we have this fight for 15 going on right now. And I've said that there is a responsible way to get there. And the responsible way to get there is to immediately raise the state minimum wage to $10 an hour. Now, we've got a state welfare to work program that encourages people to go back to work. I think that what we should do with that program is once we raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour, we will supplement employees to the tune of $5 an hour from welfare to work for the first year. Then the second year, the employer contribution will go from $10 an hour to $11. And over the next 5 years, we get the minimum wage up to $15 a year. But for $15 an hour. But for the first 5 years, the state is using welfare to work funds to supplement employers. So we're not saying we're going to make you go from where you are right now to $15 automatically, which would ultimately end up in putting people out of work. And that's not what we want to be about.
You mentioned welfare to work there. As you and I speak here on Thursday morning, the state Senate is considering a proposal which would require people receiving Medicaid, depending on their situation, if they're, you know, not disabled or taking care of someone disabled, to work a certain number of hours per week. If that were to come across the governor's desk and Bill Cobbs is sitting on the other side, what would happen to that bill?
It probably wouldn't see the light of day. I think it's a truly draconian approach to trying to contain the cost. And government can't only be about Governor Snyder's approach to balancing a budget. You know, I want to be fiscally responsible, but I think that we've got to remember that government's responsibility is putting people first. And we have not done that for a very long time. And that's gotten us to where we are today.
So how would you be fiscally responsible? Where do you see areas in the state budget where we could be doing better in terms of, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, for lack of a better term?
So I think that one of the first things that needs to be attacked is this notion that giving out tons and tons of corporate welfare is going to move Michigan forward. You know, when Governor Snyder got elected in 2011, he decided that we were going to give $1.8 billion to corporations in tax breaks. And his theory said that we'd make that up by virtue of them increasing employment and, you know, driving economic growth. Well, neither one of those two things happened. We ended up with a huge gap in our general fund. And to fill that gap, we went back to ordinary citizens and said to them, we're going to raise vehicle registration costs by 20%, and we're going to raise the gasoline tax. And we got to stop dropping the bill at the people's door who can least afford it. You know, we fundamentally have got to recognize that corporations will take every single tax break that we offer them, but we're not going to necessarily see a benefit that flows back to the community. There's a different approach.
Well, what is a way to get businesses to locate here? Because obviously you want people working. I mean, you've said that a couple different times. You want to see their wages come up. How do you get that done and not give away the store, for lack of a better
term? So here's the good news. The good news about Michigan is that in the next 10 to 15 years, if we as a state just focus on doing the right things, we have the opportunity to be the destination state in this country for people who want to come live here and for businesses to want to locate, because we're surrounded by 20% of the entire Earth's freshwater supply. 20%. But we play Russian roulette with it every single day. We allow Line 5 to continue to operate in the Mackinac Straits. We're now allowing Nestle to potentially take 400 gallons per minute, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for a $400 permit. That's ridiculous. You know, particularly when you look at the fact that you have citizens in Flint who are afraid to drink their water, and they still get a water bill that for many is $200 a month. And then you are witnessing cities like Detroit turn off thousands of citizens' water because they can't afford to pay the water bill. We fundamentally have got to remember that our first responsibility is to make sure that we look out for the health and welfare of our citizens. And so I have said, as the next governor of the state, it is critical for Michigan's future that we deploy a water and environmental policy that preserves our most important resources, not just for this generation, but for generations to come. You know, that's what Michigan is all about, because at its very core, we have to understand that water represents life.
On your website, you say that we need an honest assessment of our firearms policy. What would that include if we were to sit down and try to have a rational, reasonable discussion about guns and safety in Michigan?
So as a former police officer and a gun owner myself, I can tell you that I cringe today when I think about the fact that we have taken the Second Amendment and turned it upside down. You know, it was never meant to say that there would be no regulation of firearms. It was never meant to take battlefield weapons and put them in the hands of ordinary citizens and say, that's a good idea. We have got to have some mindful gun policy in this state that stops putting forward legislation like what was proposed last year, that we allow citizens to go out and buy weapons without a permit, put them in their cars and carry them without permits, and that was going to be a safe thing. I was really amazed that more members of the law enforcement community didn't just come out and say, this is nuts. We owe it to everybody in our community to make sure that we balance the right of gun ownership with the overall safety in our communities.
How do you get more people screened for mental health? And does that always end up being voluntary, or are there times where maybe somebody could be, compelled in some way?
So we got to turn back the hands of time. We've got to undo what Governor Engler did in tearing apart the mental health department in the state of Michigan. The notion that we could have the same kind of services that was delivered prior to his administration through privatization of mental health is a false notion. You know, today we have not one single mental health hospital in the state of Michigan. One of the things that we've got to do is reconstitute what our mental health department looked like before and recognize that we've got to be the first point of contact that people that have mental issues have. Right now, we're seeing a large portion of people that have issues that need to be dealt with having to deal with those through the criminal justice system. And it puts a burden on our prisons, on our criminal justice system, on police who aren't trained to do that. We got to have some common sense approach to this.
Detroit Free Press recently had a story about you that if people read it, they will understand that you would not be running for governor right now or sitting here talking in a radio studio were it not for a heart transplant.
Yeah, that's right.
This is something which generally in the state of Michigan falls under the Secretary of State for encouraging organ donation. But do you see anything that could be done in legislation, public policy that might encourage more people or make it easier to, you know, make sure that the organ transplant can happen?
I think one of the things that we've got to do is make sure that people get accurate information. Every time I see one of these stories that talk about organ theft and the way it's supposed to be growing exponentially, not just in our country, but across the world, I cringe because it's just not true. And it creates, I think, a resistance for people to recognize that there's real power in organ donation. My donor's mother contributed 17 organs to help other people live. And, you know, there's a saying, let me see if I can get it right. Better to leave it here than to put it in the ground. It just makes sense. You know, I can tell you that every single day I count my blessings because of her generosity, I had the opportunity to see my children graduate from college. I had the opportunity to see my first grandchild. You know, I get the opportunity to present my case to the citizens of Michigan for becoming their next governor. Those are things that I never thought I would get to do. I believe that we've got to do everything we can to encourage citizens to think about doing organ donation rather than just wasting tissues that could be used effectively to save lives.
There's a lot of conventional wisdom on politics this year that says that the energy is really coming from the left. Does the biography of business executive, Navy veteran, former police officer fit well with the idea of progressive politics?
So, you know, that it's interesting that you asked that question because one of the most frustrating things about this election cycle for me is the way has Democrats that we have absolutely fractured our party by this notion that I'm a progressive. Well, no. I'm a super progressive. I'm a neoliberal, and the basic lack of understanding that we have got to recognize that there's room in this tent for all kinds of thought process. But at the end of the day, we're all Democrats and focused on making sure that we create public policy that is in the best interest of our citizens. You know, when people ask me how would I characterize myself as a Democrat, I say, well, I'm a humanist because I go back to FDR. And, you know, you go to Washington, there's a monument to FDR. And on that monument, it says that the test of progress is not whether we can add more to the abundance of those who have much, but rather, are we prepared to provide enough for those that have too little? Now, I'll let people judge for themselves what kind of Democrat I am.
So the Democrats recently held what was called an endorsement convention. This is not official, but it now would appear that Jocelyn Benson's going to be the nominee for Secretary of State. Dana Nessel will be the nominee for Attorney General. Of course, we know Debbie Stabenow is running unopposed for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. So there has always been this feeling that the Democrats need to balance their ticket in these off-year elections with governor, attorney general, et cetera. In this case, it appears to be women who have been selected. So there's a lot of thought that there should be an African-American man somewhere in there. As the African-American man who is running for governor, do you want voters to think about balancing the ticket?
What I want voters to think about is that we should not get bogged down in gender or race or ideological politics. That takes us into the wrong sphere, and I think it only, you know, it only provides for more division in our country. And clearly, the man in Washington is doing enough dividing. We don't need a lot of other folks adding to that.
So is that to say that if someone listens to the case being made for you and the other candidates, and they conclude at the end of the day, you know what, I like Gretchen Whitmer. The fact that she's another woman on the ticket, you don't think that should be what stops them?
I think that what we've got to do if we're serious about winning next year is not just think about what we like, but understand what it's going to take to win. And this is a statewide election, so you gotta make everybody happy. You got to give everybody something to vote for. And I think that we've got to be very much aware of the fact that in order to prevail in a state that is heavily gerrymandered, we're going to have to get some moderate Republicans to come over and say, I like what the Democrats are doing better.
But gerrymandering doesn't really matter in the race for governor because it's a statewide election.
Well, it matters because, see, here's the thing that most folks don't understand about Michigan. You know, we've only had a Democratic governor in Michigan for 16 of the last 56 years. We've had two Democratic governors. We had Jim Blanchard for two terms. We had
Jennifer Granholm
for two terms. Now, there is a formula that you got to look at for a Democrat to get elected in a statewide election in Michigan. There's six counties that are critical. Genesee, Wayne, Macomb, Washtenaw, Oakland, and Lenawee. And those six counties are critical because they have almost half of the entire state's population. And when you do the analysis on those folks, that's primarily where your largest pocket of Democratic voters are. When Jim Blanchard won and when Jennifer Granholm won because they were able to excite those voters. So you got to be cognizant of who those voters are and what's important to them, because if you can't get those folks to turn out at the polls, a Democrat can't win a statewide election.
You did not mention Kalamazoo County, which was one of the eight counties that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016. I realize it doesn't have as much population, but do you have to factor that into your strategy?
It's clearly got to be a part of the overall strategy, but at the end of the day, you got to recognize where your major population density is and capture that. There's no discounting any of our counties, but you know, from a density standpoint, that's an area that you can't ignore.
So I have sat across the table from many candidates who are in your position. They are someone who is running, and in terms of name recognition, they are not at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And what I've had candidates over the years tell me is name recognition is something that you can make up. So what's your plan to do that between now and August?
I have consistently been willing to meet citizens on their own terms. That means that I will continue to be a road warrior. We've logged since the beginning of this campaign probably an average of 2,000 road miles a week getting around the state. last year I made the biggest mistake in my life. I went to the UP for the first time in the winter. You know? And that was an experience. And I've been up to the UP three times. You know, now people say, well, why? There are only 400,000 people in the UP. They're citizens. They have to have a voice. There has to be an understanding of what that voice is saying so that when I go to Lansing, I'm prepared to service everybody in the state, not just the folks who holler the loudest.
So back to your point about being the candidate that can appeal statewide, what do you think you bring to the table that would enable you to be victorious, assuming that you do win the Democratic nomination?
So here's the thing. I've often had people say, well, you're a business guy. You're just like Rick Snyder. There's no comparison between me and Rick Snyder because, you know, if you look at my background, I've got a history of building. I learned how to be a leader from the ground up. I entered the Navy as an enlisted guy. I worked my way up in corporate America. I overcame odds. My whole life is about one thing, and it's overcoming adversity. So I understand what it means to have to attack a problem when you don't have all of the support systems in place. That's probably one of the biggest differentiations between me and the other folks running for this office. I'm not saying that people should make me the next governor because, you know, I decided I was a leader. My life demonstrates that I'm a leader. You know, I'm mature. I'm not the youngest person in this race. And I think I have a track record that demonstrates that I get the job done.
Bill Cobbs, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Gordon.
Bill Cobbs is one of four Democrats seeking his party's nomination for governor. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.